This season, the Tottenham Way is sponsored by Harry's, and Harry's are the US shaving company hoping to make a big impact in the UK. And if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you can get your trial set for £3.95. That is usually worth £11.95. For that £3.95, you will get some shaving foam, a razor with five blades, a travel cover, and a handle in a colour of your choice. My handle is orange, Dan. What colour is yours?
It's quite racy. Mine's grey.
Grey. That's a bit bleak, but there is another third colour available. We don't know what that is, but do check it out. Go to harrys.com/Tottenham. Get your trial set for £3.95. Dan and I have both got it, and we both love it because it gives you the choice of when you would like to receive your blades. Thanks very much for listening, and enjoy the pod. Dan, hello.
Hello, Tom.
How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Are you feeling well?
Feeling good. This is not Monday, so I don't feel wretched. I feel quite lively. It's the middle of the week.
Do you think we should start doing a pod on Fridays and then we get party, Dan?
We could do. Go to the pub, have a few, do the pod.
Yeah.
Might work.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea. Yeah, sorry it's a bit late this week. We just had other commitments. But joining us this week, Jack Rosser. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you.
You are the Spurs and West Ham correspondent for Standard Online.
I am, yes.
I mean, I was worried about getting that wrong, but we did literally say
smashed
it.
Smashed it. One take.
Congratulations.
I know. Best thing to do is bring attention to it afterwards as well, I find. But you are also a Southampton fan.
Long suffering.
Yes. So you're obviously here to help preview the Southampton game, which is Sunday, isn't it?
Sunday. Yeah.
That'll be coming up obviously a little bit later. But Dan raised a very good point, which I hadn't thought of before we started recording, that this week? I don't think it's this week.
It's this month is 5 years of Poch in England.
Mm.
So we came to Saints, I think, 13th of January,
it was
2013.
First game was a 0-0 against Everton.
It's now, it is to this week. It's now about the 17th of January. 2018, so we've been here for 5 years.
Half a decade of Pochettino in England. We can start there, I think it's a good place to start. How did you feel when Pochettino came to Southampton? Because it was very, I mean, there was a lot of loyalty to Nigel Adkins, wasn't there? Because obviously he brought you up. Was it two promotions?
So Adkins came in when Pardew was sacked, took us up first season, took us up the next season, and then it was, January that season, that Cortese decided to sack him. And the reaction to him being sacked wasn't great personally. And I think me and my dad are the only two Southampton fans that were quite happy.
Really?
See, I don't know what it was. Great manager, did a lot for our club. I just didn't like him as a manager.
Plus he was a goalkeeper.
Exactly.
Oh, was
it?
Always weird to me.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be manager, should
exactly.
be.
Yeah. No, not having that. Don't know why.
There's no something about it, isn't there?
Like, yeah.
But no, I know... Cortese wanted shot of him from the start of the season.
Right.
And I think, you know, someone said that the only thing he regretted was not sacking him earlier. And look what Poch did.
So,
look what Poch did. And I mean, it didn't take long really to win the fans round. We did well under Koeman, obviously, but we haven't quite played football like we did under Pochettino. I think the epitome of that, we won 3-0 away at Fulham with like Lallana and Rodriguez. And maybe Lambert scoring.
It's a good team as well.
Very, very
it?
Good team. Yeah. Of course, he had Toby Alderweireld as well.
Of course.
With Wanyama and Lallana Rodriguez. Rodriguez at the highest point of his career as well. He was outstanding the season before he left. So, yeah, we miss him a lot.
Yeah, it's sort of. I was going to come on to this later, but I suppose we can.
I think that. Sorry to interrupt, but what Jack just said there, it reminds me of Spurs in a way. He gets all the players playing at their very best, and he gets the fans to fall in love with all the players, doesn't he? And I remember under Sherwood, you know, like fans were even like digging out Vertonghen. Like they're like, he's moody, he's got bad body language. Everyone was getting dug out. No one was really a hero. No one was particularly liked. And now you look at the team, and more or less every player in the Spurs squad is properly loved by supporters, and I think it was the same at Saints.
They all swear by Pochettino as well. I mean, you see, it's not really been until sort of this season that I suppose with Rodriguez moving, Lambert retiring, they've all started to speak about working under Pochettino, and they all absolutely swear by him. And I think some of Luke Shaw sees him still as a father figure and stuff like that, and that he sort of creates that atmosphere. And then when he left, that's when the exodus, the annual exodus began.
Interesting when you think that probably the only player that's really advanced or done as well as their level at Southampton is Alderweireld, and that's because he's playing under Poch at Spurs as well. I mean, you can argue Lallana,
I guess. I think that's a bit harsh on some of the Liverpool guys.
Really?
I mean,
Klein's not really done all that much.
Klein's been injured, really badly injured. He was doing well, but Lallana's very important for England, I think. I take your point.
I mean, Poch didn't work with Mane, but he's another one that's gone on and has just gone to another level. Since there are a few, though, you're right. Shaw, as I know, he had his nasty injury, but even before that, he was a shadow of the player he was under Pochettino, and he does seem like that sort of character that just needs a bit of a slap on the back from Poch and arm round to get him going. And I think Pochettino's so good at that.
Were you gutted when Spurs came in, or did you wonder why he was maybe making the move, considering what Spurs were like at the time?
No, I think you could see. I mean, we were definitely a club on the up, but Cortese had already left, and he was the one that pitched the whole idea to Pochettino. He was the one that pitched the idea to all the players that joined when we were in League One, and said, you know, we're targeting Champions League football. No, it hasn't quite got there, but you know, reach Europe. And he'd left, and there was a lot going on behind the scenes. So I think I was resigned to the fact that he'd probably go. It was a bit gutting, but you could understand it. It's got to that point now where I'm not just angry when every single player leaves the club. There is a, like, you know, players come back and get Lallana gets booed routinely.
Really?
When he comes
back. He
was
captain, wasn't he?
Yeah, Pochettino gave him the armband.
Right.
Which was a big statement of, like, a bit of faith in him, and he really did well under him. And so they come back and get booed. I'm sure Van Dijk will get a lovely treatment when he comes back, but I don't.
That's kind of fair enough, though, in a way. I can say it.
It is and it isn't, because you know, it's, you can't stop a player joining a club like Liverpool or like Tottenham now. You know, it's in that band of it's a career move. It's a big decision. And they're not going to reach those heights for Southampton.
Fair enough. Well, we'll preview Southampton a little bit more later. With regards to Spurs, a little bit of activity in transfer window, but all loans. Nkudu to Burnley since we last recorded. Sorry, Burnley. Edwards to Norwich, which is the one that's the big talking point from this week. Lots of talk about Edwards sort of getting the minutes that Pritchard has vacated, if you like, because he's gone to Huddersfield. Do you think it's going to be as simple as that, or has Edwards really got to prove himself? Who's manager at Norwich now?
Daniel Farke.
German, right?
Yeah, I think he replaced Wagner.
Talking of which, they're playing Chelsea as we speak.
Yes, they are.
Who? Norwich? Oh, yeah.
We should put it on and see if Edwards is playing.
See if Edwards is. He probably hasn't been registered. No, in fact, I think you can't, because whoever Chelsea signed recently can't.
Oh, really?
Barkley can't play in it because he wasn't registered for the first game, I think. So it's
Fair enough. I don't think he's going to walk straight into the team and play the games Pritchard would have played without impressing them. But yeah, I think going, Pochettino sending players on loan is never a good sign. And I know he's sort of suggested this season with Onoma and Carter Vickers leaving that he's had a change of heart, and he suggested that his policy was always that if a player's around the first team for 2 years and doesn't get enough minutes, he then sends them on loan. Which I'm not sure is totally true, but the problem is that there's no kind of counter example at the moment. So he said this is the case, and Carter Vickers has come back, and obviously if he walks straight into the first team, which he won't, then we could say, oh, you know, Pochettino has changed his mind on loans, and actually they're tremendously beneficial now. But I still think that, you know, there isn't a player I can think of apart from Dele Alli, and I think Philip Lesniak is the other one, who's ever been sent on loan by Pochettino and then played for the first team.
Yeah.
I still don't think there's anyone. May well be wrong, but that was the case last season, I think. So, in one sense, it's not a good time for Edwards, but in the other sense, he's just turned 19. he wasn't playing at all. There didn't seem to be much hope of him playing. I mean, in the FA Cup against Wimbledon, he wasn't on the albeit he, I think he had a back injury for that game, but there were no youngsters on the bench. So if he goes to Norwich and plays as we know he can play, then there's no reason why he won't come back more mature, more experienced, and have a chance at Spurs. But I think really it could be read in two different ways at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because when you look at the options that we've got, apart from, so if you look at the front four as it is now, behind that there's not really that many options. If you look at our bench when all four are playing, there's very few players that you can point to and say they can make a difference. And I appreciate that Edwards is not, we can't say it, we can't have an educated opinion on Edwards necessarily for first team football and say he could come on and make a difference, but his pathway's not really been blocked necessarily. And if you look at how badly Nkudu has taken his chances this and last season, well, you pull a face, but he's been
awful. No, I agree with you. I think
awful.
I mean, I was saying it about Nkudu, and the same is true of Edwards. For all those games at Wembley, all those frustrating draws and frustrating 1-0s as well against Palace and Bournemouth, would it really have hurt to have had Nkudu or Edwards on the bench? You know, at 0-0 against Swansea, you give them 8 minutes and tell them to stay out of Spurs' half and just run at the Swansea players and see what happens and have a few digs. I mean, you know, what is the worst happen?
Well,
honestly. But then I do think it was possibly, you know, judging from Pochettino's book anyway, it was possibly an attitude thing. I think he said he doesn't respond well to authority or something. So
maybe a message then? It's not going to be as easy.
Well, possibly. Having said what I just said, and there's been a lot of people calling for the same thing, I don't think you can just say to someone who's really talented, who hasn't been showing the right attitude, oh, there you go, you know, here's some first team minutes, you're on the bench again, because it just sends a terrible message to the other players in the youth team. And if you look at the players Poch has promoted who have come through, like Kane and Winks, they're obviously model professionals. They work as hard as anyone, and there's no coincidence really. So I think there's probably a case of Edwards needing to knuckle down a bit and kind of put work rate alongside his obvious talent.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough.
I think that's something you certainly have to do in the Championship, and if it works, he's a player that Norwich need. I mean, I can't say I've seen too much of them, but I sort of keep an eye on it because friends support them and things like that, and having watched their games, they've got good enough players to take control of the game but not really make a real impact. So if Edwards can go there and sort of give them a bit of that lift and a bit more creativity, then it could be a really good move for him. But like Dan says, if it is an attitude problem and he doesn't take well to being sent away and having to work hard, it's really a tough one to work out.
It's not like
It feels I don't like using the expression make or break, but it feels a little bit like, you know, if he has 6 months in Norwich and he comes back and he's made two starts and four sub appearances and done nothing, you just wonder, you know, what happens now. You know, does another Championship club take him for the whole of next year, by which time he'll be 21? You know, does he stay at Spurs? I mean, he really has got to take the chance, doesn't he, because he's obviously so talented. It just feels like a shame.
I think it's quite difficult because I was at West Ham Shrewsbury in the FA Cup third round replay, which brilliant. And they, Moyes showed a lot of faith in youngsters. Rhys Oxford started, who, you know, as you say, could happen with Edwards, has been away to Gladbach, barely played, comes back, got injured on his first day, a few days out, came back. He was awful against Shrewsbury. Tony Martinez, who fans have been hammering on the door for him to get minutes, started up front, played the whole game, was awful. So I don't know if it's a case of Edwards is clearly extremely talented, but I don't know if fans expect too much from him.
I've never known a player, particularly a youth player, to have so much hype from no grounding whatsoever. Like, most people are demanding, and I'm included in that. I've seen him play 15 competitive minutes against Gillingham, I think, and he didn't do anything. I'm not basing anything either way on that, but I'm like desperate for this guy to start because of all this stuff that you've heard. And he's clearly talented, and there's you don't get that much behind a player without there being something to it. But he hasn't really done anything.
But maybe that's where Norwich will benefit him. If he gets the chance to go out on loan and get minutes where, you know, a lot of Spurs fans will still be watching him, but it's not as if he's on at Wembley against whoever with all this pressure on him to perform well because everyone thinks he's, you know, the next best thing. Maybe it's a good chance for him to go and get a bit of, get some time under his belt away from the limelight slightly.
Yeah. I mean, Pochettino hasn't been guilt-free in sort of building up that expectation high, has he?
Yeah.
Literally just compared him to Messi
before
he played. So, yeah, I wonder if he's regretted that ever so slightly.
The East Anglian Messi. No.
Yeah, I mean, just on Carter Vickers, by the way, I think there was a presser a few weeks ago where Pochettino hinted at recalling him and just said, yeah, maybe he'll come back. But he basically said, it's not because we need more centre-backs, it's because it'll be for his development, which kind of suggested that maybe they weren't happy with whatever was happening at Sheffield United. And I haven't seen a single minute of him there, so I can't comment on it. But I don't think he's going to be on the bench or playing anytime soon. I still think he's well behind sort of fourth, and maybe they'll send him on another loan that they think is better for him.
Yeah, fair enough. Apparently he was playing in a three at Sheffield United, who were flying in the Championship as well.
Well, which all sounds quite encouraging. I don't know. I just, that's what Potts says.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Everton
and Nkudu. Yeah. Good luck.
No. It's a refusal. Waving that man off. 4-0 Everton, back to winning ways at Wembley after West Ham was the previous league game, I think. It feels very much like we're getting comfortable there at Wembley, and if you look at the game on Boxing Day against Southampton,
you ruined my Christmas.
The Stoke game as well, 5-1 against Stoke, wasn't it? We seem like we're getting more comfortable, and we've had this discussion quite a lot, but I am finding it interesting that we've kind of got used to this pitch, if you like, and getting better and better at Wembley, and then in 8 months we've got to do it all over again. Does it worry you at all, Dan, as a Spurs fan? Let's go to you first. Does it worry you at all that we're going to have three home stadiums in three seasons? And it sometimes takes us a while to get going anyway.
Well, no, because I think it's the new White Hart Lane, isn't it? I don't think it's the same as moving somewhere completely different.
No, but it's a different, totally different environment. The thing that sticks with me is the thing that you
said
about...
Yeah, but you know what? Did you see that? I watched that The Lane documentary on BT Sport the other night, a few months late. And one of the things that struck me was all the former players saying, oh yeah, you know, you get the bus down the high street and you get very used to it, and you know, you see all the fans and you come in and it's very much... None of that changes. It's just a newer stadium and a better stadium. It's still home. It's still where they're used to going. You know, all those guys, barring this summer signings and next summer signings, would have been used to playing at White Hart Lane. And they'll retain that element of comfort. It will still be home. So I think it's not going to be... My point is, it's not going to be like moving to another sort of Wembley.
No.
You know, a whole new place. But I take your point. It's a...
I quite strongly disagree with that whole thing of it. I don't think it's like the same.
You're disagreeing with me on the podcast.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. This is very rare. Usually it's I say something, you go, you blow me out of the water with like facts.
Get
or
out.
Something. And then I end up having to back down, but not this time.
Okay. I mean,
something that stuck with me. No, one of the things that stuck with me and the reason that I've, or part of the reason why I've had this opinion is that you said, I think it was Toby at the beginning of the season, said like, when he's picking out a crossfield pass, if you're at a home stadium, you almost aim for like an advertising board or something And that doesn't, and that's obviously changed at Wembley, and it will be different again next season. And the fact that we've had an entire year away from there, there's going to be that novelty factor as well, which could play into our hands, of course, and it should do. It's going to be incredible when we get back there. But I don't think it's going to be quite as like, oh, we're just going back to the same place, because it isn't. It's a completely, you know, if you knock down your house and then build a new one, you don't go in there expecting to know where everything is.
But you're still round the corner from the local corner shop. You still know where your nearest tube station is.
Is Hugo Lloris like getting the 96?
I'm taking your analogy and running with it. It's still Tottenham. It's still home, and I still think that I still think that plays a part.
I think it plays for fans more than players.
But what is home advantage really? It's basically, I think it's occasionally the ref feeling pressure from the fans, but then beyond that, it's psychologically feeling comfortable and therefore playing your best and feeling at home and
having a bigger changing room.
I just like to think that it being Tottenham Stadium, not Wembley, which let's face it, is soulless and a bit shite.
It's bad. Yeah.
No, I think I'm kind of agreeing with you. I'm saying it won't be like another Wembley move.
I think
Pochettino didn't really want to talk about it early in the season, and none of the players did either. But they've slowly sort of started admitting that teams are really raising their level because it's Wembley, which is something that's been talked about a lot. And it will be nice for a lot of teams to go to the new stadium because it is a new ground, and it'll be really nice facilities. And that's one thing that when you speak to promoted teams, that's what they look forward to most, is going to all the new, you know, the best grounds in the country. But it won't have that factor of, Christ, we're playing at Wembley. We need to put in the like performance of our lives. And I think that is another thing that will help, but I sort of have to agree with Dan. I think they'll be a bit more familiar.
Okay.
You can come back.
You don't have to, just because it's Dan's podcast. You don't have to do that.
It's both our podcasts. I mean, it's mainly mine, but it's also both our podcasts. Yeah.
It'll be interesting. It will be very interesting, I think, next season. We're going to ask this later. I mean, we can talk about Everton. Well, is there much to talk about? Like, Kane broke the record. Fantastic. Yeah. We've spoken about Kane
every week.
It does, yeah. And it feels like we talk about Kane and we can't say any more than what we've already done. He's hit another record. He's going to hit many more.
There was a great quote after the Everton game where someone asked him about breaking Jimmy Greaves' record, and he was like, yeah, I'm kind of thinking about records on a month-by-month basis. So it's like, yeah, so September I can break this record.
Yeah.
October I can do this one. November there's it's just like
but also
just
record see, scoring in August, but we can't pick holes as well, can we? Yeah.
That's the thing though, we've seemed to caught him at two bad times now. We caught him on Boxing Day when he had the calendar year one in his sights, and now we've got him where he can surpass 100.
But three seasons you've had a bit of a walloping off Kane Christmas.
Really good fun. I think it's been the same, you know, you get the two fixtures where you play each other in the space of about a month. That's been Saints Spurs for the last couple of years. It's the 2 years where we've been really good.
You're
really
going on Sunday, Jack?
Yes.
Just a question that I'm always interested in. Obviously you're a big Saints fan, but you're working for the Standard and London paper, so you're really there to
cover Tottenham.
To cover Tottenham and push sort of Spursy stuff on social media and in your report.
Yeah.
How are you gonna manage it? How are you gonna feel?
Boxing Day's helped. Okay. I was sat frustrated.
But you're in St Mary's.
That makes a big difference. But we got walloped 5-0 by Arsenal when I was working last year. So things like that have helped a bit. I've learned the first few ones I did, it was very hard, and I just ended up being overly critical on Saints. I think Boxing Day, I managed to hype up Kane to all, like, I think because it was the record, it was like, yeah, seen something. And thankfully I wasn't sat in with all you Tottenham suede journalists and things like that.
Oh, come on. I'm tremendously impartial.
I was sat next to Adam Leach from the Echo in Southampton, and we both just sort of sat there with our heads down and not looking at what we were typing. But I think, you know, I've come to accept now that we're probably going to concede about 4. So I'm prepared for it, at least.
Do you think it could be a thumping? I mean, confidence seems to be low.
As soon as the first two go in, that's it.
The first two.
We can talk about that later.
Yeah, we will come on to Southampton because there's a couple sort of extended questions that would be nice to get your thoughts on. But Everton itself, Aurier started after, so it was a week off that we had since the FA Cup game. Usually that kind of indicates that Trippier is going to start because he started the season as first choice. Tide started to turn a little bit, do you think, in favour of Aurier, who's starting seemingly most games at Wembley? For sure. I think Trippier only played against Swansea.
Is that right? Christmas. I haven't looked at that because you didn't send me the running order. But before Rose got injured as well, it did. I mean, because Danny Rose got such a mauling. I'm talking nonsense. Because Trippier got such a mauling at City, I think the tide has started to turn in toward Aurier, didn't it? And I almost felt like before Rose got injured, the tide was turning towards him as well over Davis. I think he started two back to back.
Yeah, he was slowly looking a bit sharp.
I think it's fair to say that most Spurs fans would pick Aurier and Rose because they seem to be quicker, they're kind of better physically, and I think what Spurs are striving for is the heyday of kind of this time last season when Walker and Rose were just terrorising everyone, and this time the season before when everyone was more scared of them than anyone else and they were just bombing up the flanks, getting loads of assists and stretching teams out of shape. And there's been some signs that Aurier and Davis and Rose before he got injured are starting to do that as well. And I think Aurier did look like such a car crash for the first couple of months and just kept passing to opposition centre forwards and like setting up really good counter attacks. But now his crossing has impressed me. It's got a lot better. He's kind of almost gone unnoticed, but he's fizzing in a lot of like really good balls. What he came to do was provide that athleticism and dribbling quality technique on the right, and we're starting to see him do that now. So I think it's looking good.
Do you think, Jack, the Trippier experiment is over?
I think he would have been sitting quite comfortable. I was chatting to, I can't remember who I was chatting to about this, but a while ago when Aurier came in, he probably would have been quite worried. But you think, as you know, the early Aurier games, Trippier would have been quite happily sat on the bench watching him. So maybe Aurier coming back into form is good for Trippier. I quite like him as a player. I think he gives you a bit more of a easy watch if defensive wise. I think there's always a chance Aurier could do something that no other professional footballer would think of. to like let the opposition
what
in.
Dummy when he
it was against Dortmund.
Yeah. He just laid down.
He either slipped and covered it extremely well.
It was 100% a dummy because Aurier has just done an incredible dummy in his own area, and a few people responded on Twitter like, "Oh, he slipped." Watched it back.
100%.
Fully meant it,
didn't
it?
Yeah.
Which so I kind of Asu Okoto-esque.
That's a really good actually. That is a very good comparison because Asu Okoto was a really good functional left back and was really impressive under Redknapp as well.
Yeah.
But he was insane, and you could tell at any minute he used to do this drag back every time.
Questionable personality as well.
Yeah.
Many similarities.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, we've just found the right footed Asu Okoto. That's very good. I like that. Before we move on, Eriksen's goal doesn't seem to have got a lot of plaudits necessarily. A lot of people complaining that, like, even the commentators when they were watching didn't really like raise the volume or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly gone down well on sort of Spurs Twitter.
And not just the kind of end of it as well, like the last four touches, which was like Aurier to Son to Dele to Eriksen, which was obviously great, but it involved the whole team, which you've brought up a few times about how Pochettino really loves that goal. Is a Kane goal that you always reference about how it started from the back. We were under pressure. I think it was against Villa or something, and it eventually turned into the whole team.
Possibly the reason it hasn't got the plaudits it maybe deserves is because Everton were beaten by then, and I think even Big Sam sort of on record saying we just gave up and our heads went down.
His press conference was quite entertaining.
I wasn't in it actually.
Yeah, he just sort of sat down and he went, I don't know. he had no idea what had happened to them. They looked, and I said before we started, they looked like Unsworth's Everton. They came to Southampton and we scored four against them, which this season is saying something.
Yeah.
They were awful, but that goal was, I mean, I have to say I slightly oversold Son's part in it in my report, watching it back, but it was really, really impressive. And Eriksen's finish was outstanding as well.
Yeah.
But it does strike me as something that Pochettino would.
Well, yeah, I don't think he necessarily wants everyone to touch the ball, but I know he loves goals that start from the back and kind of build up, and that's what it's all about, really. And I don't think it was a case of kind of breaking Everton's press, because I'm not sure they were sort of pressing by that point.
They didn't have anything.
It was kind of slow build up, and then you could just see as soon as it got into sort of the final third or the final two thirds, the tempo just went up and the passes got quicker, and then suddenly it was at Eriksen's feet and he was finishing. So it was a really,
Kane
really
was quite involved as well, didn't he? He sort of held the ball up, and that's something in the last few weeks he just seems to have. Like his pass for Ali's goal is
in the last few weeks. It's just, if anything's gone unnoticed, it's that. Like, the match of the day could do a whole kind of skit on him just picking up the ball with his back to goal and fizzing the perfect diagonal out to one of the fullbacks or wingers. He really is
more to it, isn't
he? Superhuman.
Okay, don't think we need to do anything more on Everton. They were dross. And we played well, and that's about it. Before we go on to Southampton and a proper preview, there's some contract talk floating around at the moment. Seems to have gathered pace. The Toby thing has been a narrative for longer than this season, I think. I think this is extended into last season.
Yeah, definitely. First, it kind of started when that Football Leaks or whatever revealed that he had that release clause in his contract.
Right, yeah.
I think that's when it started to pick up pace, which was early last season, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been rumbling on for a while.
Yeah, but I know it is rumour, but there always tends to be some element of truth in some of the stuff that comes out, I suppose. But positive signs by looks of things.
It looks like it. I mean, Spurs are normally quite quick to shoot things down if there's nothing to it. They're never too quick to stand things up or anything. But you know, if
careful, they do listen. Come up to me before and say, we're always listening.
Is that what they actually said?
Hello, lads.
That's so sinister. I kind of like it. Just giving you Daniel Lennon's card.
we are watching.
Yeah.
But no, it all seems, you know, it has been going on for a long, long time, and that seems to be gathering pace, especially with Toby. And I think it seems like something that would suit all parties. There's never been any rumour or any sort of inkling that either side want anything else but him to stay at the club a bit longer.
Yeah.
Anything
on? He's had two injuries, pretty nasty injuries in the last 2 years. Both. Is it the same knee he's done?
No, he's done a hamstring.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Last season was is that a nerve?
Last season was last season was like a really weird one.
But
like
he's got
a nerve in his leg.
Yeah, and he's nearing 30, which.
Well, he's 28. Yeah, I mean, I think is he? I think he's going to be 29 fairly soon. So, I think what you might have read is he'll be 30 when his contract ends.
Right.
His current contract ends.
Nearly 30.
Yeah, nearly. I think it's definitely sounding a lot more positive. I think what Toby's position is pretty clear. Like he's nearly 30. He'll be nearing 30, and I think he knows how good he is. He knows he's one of the best centre backs in the league. And he also knows what company and
Stones.
Defenders who were much less reliable and not as good as him are being paid. And I think he just wants. I think he gets paid about 55 grand a week, and he wants to be paid, you know, 2.5 times that.
Yeah.
Which he obviously deserves in today's market. So it's not unreasonable. And yeah, I agree with Jack. I don't think there's kind of been nothing to suggest that he's sort of desperate to leave. I think he just wants to be paid what
he's worth. Just wants parity.
Which is toward the end of his career. And I think Spurs know that, and it does sound like it does sound a lot more positive now. I mean, I haven't heard anything, but some good journalists that have said that he's in talks and is progressing. But the injury is definitely something to factor in, I think. You know, he's supposed to be back in a few weeks at the beginning of February, maybe a Liverpool game. So surely, you know, from a Spurs perspective, you'd sort of wait. And you wait another month just to make sure all is well, because hamstring injuries are tricky.
Yeah.
You know, some players around that age struggle to come back from them, especially ones that keep you out for 3 months, which it will be by the time he comes back. So there's definitely a case not to rush it, but I think you saw in October and November, just when Spurs just couldn't stop conceding, especially from corners, which is kind of still ongoing. Slight worries from corners that they do really miss him.
Also, talk of Son, talk of Eriksen as well. There's apparently been it's all rumour, but there's the names are out there again.
Rumours.
Son is never one that's ever come up before. It's just always been Son's happy because he's always happy, and then just carry on. But he's hit that vein of consistency now where it's like you can't ignore it, and he does deserve a new deal. He's been here 3 years, 2.5 years now as well.
I think it was his 40th goal as well.
Is that right?
At the club at the weekend.
I mean, that is
not bad at all. But I've had, he's been outstanding, and it's got to the point now where we've done 4 or 5 post-match press conferences where the question's been, Son's really good. Is he getting the credit he deserves? After having a load of credit, and you know, he's had that tag of the most underrated player in the Premier League for a while.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily know if that's true anymore.
Yeah,
I think everyone knows.
I mean, there's definitely a case that if he was like French and played for United or Liverpool, there'd definitely be more people banging on about him.
Yeah,
but having said that, there have been about 6 articles he said this week.
Yeah.
From various websites saying Son is the most underrated player in the league, which sort of now he can't be.
He's been very much rated. Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? Where's the tipping point? But we'll see, I suppose. But it's good to talk about that sort of thing. So let's move on to Southampton Sunday, 4 o'clock kickoff.
Do we have to?
Oh, we have to, I'm afraid. But I mean, I don't know. When we've done this before, I think that we tend to have this sort of. I think we had somebody, his name escapes me, and Dan, you'll be able to remind me, the Crystal Palace fan that we had on last year.
Greg Lee,
that's it. And we discussed it, and he was like, we're in a really bad run of form, it's going to be really difficult, you're obviously still in the title race, you should absolutely walk it. And then we just made such hard work of it. And that tends to be Tottenham's way a little bit. So I'm interested to hear, you're on a 1 league win in 13, is
something
that correct?
Like that. We haven't won in 10. And as much as people want to moan about what happened against Watford with the Decore catching it and throwing it in, you can't be allowing teams to sort of come back in and do that to you. And that's the thing, like I mentioned earlier, the first two goals go in, and the head drops, and there's no real fight inside anymore. So Spurs go 2-0 up, we could finish 5 or 6. Realistically, it's just not a nice atmosphere around the club anymore, which is what we've had for quite a long time, really, since Adkins came in. Pochettino continued it, Koeman continued it, and then it just dipped under Puel, and it's just gone south from there, really.
So Pellegrino's he's definitely under pressure.
Certainly,
He won the FA Cup game and got booed off at Craven Cottage.
Yes, I was there. He made a substitution.
Yeah, I mean, he's unpopular. And you mentioned Puel there as well, and there seems to be this idea that Southampton have just become really sterile and stale under these last two managers.
Puel finished, what, 9th?
8th. 8th in the League Cup final, yeah.
And he's got Leicester playing some decent football. I mean, how do you feel about that one?
It's a strange one because I didn't know too much about him when we appointed him. All the things I'd heard were that his sides had played really good football, and it was Nice he was at before Saints, and
into the semi-finals of Champions League or something, didn't he?
Yeah, or was that might have been Lille or Lyon.
All I can say about him is he speaks so quietly.
God, it's insane.
There was Southampton away last year, literally couldn't hear what he was saying in the press conference.
You can't.
Trying to transcribe it.
Yeah. Sky like pre-record his interviews and actually build the volume up when they play it before games. It's incredible. No, I mean, I was going to say I've never heard anything like it. But
it's the same interview every time as well. Yeah. It's always full of interesting possibilities.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I get his command of English isn't great and you don't expect it to be, but... it was painful doing his press conferences.
Yeah,
it was nice to see him with a smile on his face as Leicester manager of the day at West Ham. missed his dulcet tones.
What's Pellegrino's? Or what is the problem then this season? And why is it? Because you're 17th now and sinking fast a very competitive relegation.
It's really hard to put your finger on it. Really, I think the point I was making with Puel played attacking football, didn't at Southampton. And the hope was that would change under Pellegrino, and it hasn't. And I think a lot of fans are really, really, like, for a long time now, and it seems to be most of the fan base are calling for Pellegrino's head and putting it all on him. Mm. And the club have tried to use Van Dijk as an excuse. Ralph Kruger, the chairman, came out and did an interview and said, look, we've had this clown over us for the last 6 months, that's gone now. Mm. And then we lost 2-1 to Palace the next day, so it hadn't really, that hadn't helped it too much. But I know Pellegrino seemed more confident in recent weeks from speaking to people down there. Like, there's a bit of an air of something in the squad, but it just hasn't got better footballing wise. And I think there's a realisation that maybe Puel might have wanted to play attacking football, same with Pellegrino, but he hasn't got the players to do it. And today we've lost Adam Walcott, he's gone to Everton. I'm not convinced that would have been the signing we needed, but I think that's what needs to change. I just think we haven't got the, we still haven't replaced Pella and Mane.
Yeah.
When we sold them, Pella looked like a fantastic deal when he went. He was left for China for about about 13 million, I think. And he was in his 30s, and great, fine, off you go. Mane looked a good deal, and we just haven't replaced him. Nathan Redmond's come in, and he's had a hell of a lot of stick this season, which has been the main
Guardiola,
part been unfair.
Guardiola himself.
That was very strange.
Yeah, that is odd.
But performances like that prove that we can do it. You know, we've gone to Man City and we're very unlucky there. Got a point at Old Trafford, played really well. A point against Arsenal, should have won that game. So maybe this weekend is one where we can do that. But
I was going to ask, is this the perfect game for Pellegrino?
It could be, but I just don't see Tottenham at the moment in the form they're in, and Harry Kane with a record to break, as being something we can stop.
Yeah.
Realistically. It could play into our hands.
When you say about the board and there, or who did you say was making noises about Van Dijk and saying it was a cloud?
Ralph Kruger, chairman, did an interview.
So you've got a chairman who's Southampton have consistently sold since they got up into the league.
Yeah.
They have sold one or two, sometimes more, of their best players every single season without investing.
Apart from this summer, but now Van Dijk's gone.
Yeah. So that was a delayed almost. And he was your biggest and probably best player.
Oh yeah, certainly.
Necessarily. And you can't expect anything different, can you? I mean, we sell big players, and we've got a track history of selling our big players, but and replacing badly as well, to be fair.
That's where it's changed for Southampton, though.
Recruitment.
It's the replacing.
Right.
The same team in the parts that there are no Paul Mitchell left and went to Spurs for a bit and has gone on somewhere else now. But that didn't really change when he went. But that's what's changed. It's the recruitment hasn't been exactly what it was before. Nathan Redmond really being the example of that. And then there's a few defenders we brought in as sort of pre-replacements for Van Dijk. We're still sort of waiting to see how they got on. Wesley Hoop looks a decent defender. But there's so many different things that are changing, and the atmosphere amongst the fans as well. I think the expectations were raised so high, having had three or four top eight finishes in a row, that that should be the norm now. And even Kruger said that's not the norm, which is a strange thing to say to club chairman.
Isn't it? Yeah, because you were kind of a blueprint. It was a young English side with an ambitious young Pochettino. You know, he was underrated. A lot of people pointed to his spell at Espanyol and stuff like that, as saying, like, you know, what does this guy know and stuff. But you gave him a chance, and he worked incredibly well and brought a lot of players on and developed them to a point where you were selling them for £30 million. And if you weren't, then they were staying in the team and performing to a high level. You were the blueprint for a lot of sides.
We were held up as the, you know, say a manager gets promoted, what do you want to be like? I would quite like to do what Southampton have done, and that sort of mould. And, you know, it was a really happy atmosphere with everything going on. And, you know, I think the final day of the season under Koeman's last season, we beat Palace 4-1, pit West Ham to automatic Europa League qualification. That was almost like we've done it. And then Everton come along saying, oh, we're going to take Ronald Koeman, and it just got laughed away. Everybody's like, well, who do you think you are to come and take our manager? And it's happened, and whatever's happened there with him is a different story. But that was something that wasn't expected to happen. And from then, fans have slowly turned on Kruger, Les Reed, director of football, who fans seem to have forgotten he was there when it was all good as well. and of course he does have to take some blame for what's happened, but it's a really strange, really strange toxic atmosphere, which is why if Spurs do go 1-0 up this weekend, there's no fight in the side at the moment to come back. There's no leaders in the side.
Feels like it was just reminding me of Swansea there as well, who were held up as this great example of how to play the right kind of football, of how to replace players, of how to replace managers, of how to be a small club in the Premier League and be really enjoyable and successful. And
you can't sustain it if you're just going to sell it off piece
by
piece.
No, but I mean, there was an interesting piece Miguel Delaney did this week in The Independent saying that, you know, because the Premier League's been made out to be this, you know, you have to be there, it's the be-all and end-all. You know, clubs have become very reactive in basically appointing, you know, the Hodgson, Allardyce, Lambert, guys who are just specialists at kind of keeping you in the league and not really aiming for the sky. And, you know, you do wonder if Southampton, you know, if in a few weeks, if it gets any worse, you just have to get in someone to keep you in the Premier League.
Because I think they've almost reached a point now where, you know, you're halfway through the transfer window. They've said they're going to spend some of the Van Dijk money.
They've got to stick with Pellegrini, really.
They came out and said he's our man. He's, you know, he's taken on the culture of the club and he's brilliant.
I mean, I don't know who's available. Pulis isn't available, is he?
Middlesbrough.
So I mean, there's no one out there to replace him unless it goes horrifically bad over the next 3 or 4 weeks. I think the Spurs game, it's not a free hit, we need some points, but there's an understanding. If we show something but still lose, fine, but then we've got games against teams around us that we need to take points from. So unless it goes horrifically the next few weeks, he will be into the end of the season, whatever happens. But yeah, it's a strange one. It's got all the hallmarks of the season we went down at the moment.
And that was 2005, isn't it?
4-5.
The last time you beat us at St Mary's, in fact. Do you know who scored that day?
No, you'll have to.
Nigel Kwasi.
Oh, brilliant.
So, I mean, it could be worse. That's
like the Range Rover once. That was a tangent.
Yeah, it doesn't give any other details than that, unfortunately. But that was the last time you beat us there. Dan, the game itself, do you think just carry on doing what we've been doing, do the same against Everton, we should be absolutely fine?
Yeah.
It's not really much more to it. This is the sort of game that Pochettino has really kind of nailed with Spurs, though, isn't it? Going away to a sort of struggling side. We tend to do very, very well against the teams in the bottom five, particularly at their grounds. We tend to sort of turn the screw.
Yeah, it does feel daunting for Saints just because the front four all seem to have clicked. They all seem to be on form at the moment, you know, particularly Son and Kane. But I also think Ali... It's been really menacing for the last kind of month now, really since just before Christmas, which has almost slightly gone unnoticed.
19 goals and assists, I think, this season.
Ali?
Altogether, I think so. Somebody said that
really?
The other day. Yeah, his assists have gone through the roof. That
surprised me.
And he has scored more goals than you think as well. Yeah. He started in August, first game of the season, and he's plugged away as he's gone on. I think someone said 19.
Yeah, I mean, him and Eriksen had their usual kind of autumn downtime. But it does feel like an impossible task for Saints because they'll be trying to stop Kane scoring 100 goals.
It just doesn't happen.
They'll be very worried about Son.
Yeah.
And then you've got Eriksen and Ali who quite fancy at the moment as well. And I think the great thing about the Everton game was just it looked so balanced between defensive solidity and free-flowing attacking as well. And it has looked a bit ropey at the back. And around about the time of the Watford game and the Leicester game, you know, was it late November, I think?
Yes. Yeah.
I just did not think Spurs were going to keep a clean sheet. And I just thought, you know, both teams are going to score in these games.
But it looks like they all feel like they've got a point to prove now. The reaction from the Man City game, which I went to.
Yeah.
We were both there. Yeah. And they were, I mean, Man City are brilliant. And
Ryan kind of alluded to that this week, didn't he?
Yeah, he was asked about it.
Yeah, he did say after the Everton game, I think, that the reaction had been...
It's been all you'd want from a team. You can't fault the way they've been playing since. And I think that's just such a daunting thing to face when you're in a situation like Southampton are. that it's almost a banker.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like, it also does feel like kind of Spurs need to win as well, though, because February is just absurd, isn't it? Well, late January begins with United on the 31st, and then I think it's Liverpool, Juve, Arsenal,
and who we got in the cup? They're in the middle of all of that, which is
Newport's just before United, a few days before United.
I think it's after. I think we play United midweek. No, and it's Newport.
Newport's 27th of January. United's 31st.
Yeah, you're right.
So
yeah.
I mean, once Saints and Newport are out of the way, it is just a ridiculous run of five games. And you know, again, don't want to use the phrase make or break, but
they weren't fancy playing us. None of them.
But you know, the next kind of seven games, you know, got to get through the FA Cup, which I'm sure Spurs will. Mm. Got the games against Juve, you know, which would obviously determine if they're going to the next round of the Champions League, and then it's United, Liverpool, and Arsenal in the league, and I think that would go a long way to determining whether it's, you know, whether a top four finish or even a top two finish is possible.
Yeah, a lot at stake. Before we do a listener, we've got a couple of listener questions. One of them we'll do. I wanted to ask you, Jack, about the stadium. We mentioned Wembley. And we mentioned how it was difficult to transition between the two, and obviously Southampton quite recently, but it wasn't, was it? It feels like yesterday. It's one of those things where you're like...
The test, last game of the day.
Yeah, 3-2 against Arsenal.
Yeah.
Is that right? And were you 2-0 down?
Yes.
And he scored...
I think it was 2-0 down.
It is just such Hollywood, isn't it?
He snatched the final goal out of the...
not to kiss your arse, but I think he's my favourite non...
Yeah, you've
Spurs
said
this
before, you love him,
absolutely
don't you?
Absolutely love him.
Spurs fan.
Just so good.
Yes, he was nearly a Spurs player, or is that a bit?
Yeah, they came in from.
Yeah.
He likes to tell.
Kind of almost glad that he never played for Spurs. No, just such,
ruined the legacy.
Such a cold career at Saints.
Yeah, it was incredible. But so the Dell was obviously much loved. It was really old fashioned, wasn't it?
Massive.
I remember one game when Mark Hughes scored a goal and it hit the advertising board and came out, and because the goals were so shallow. Ref didn't give it. Like, it literally went into the middle of the goal and bounced out, and the goal wasn't given. It was Mark Hughes, wasn't
it? Yes, I think it was Mark Hughes.
48-year-old Mark Hughes, or whatever he was by
that
time.
We've had a few of them.
Yeah. But it had a real charm, and it was uniquely British old school stadium. And then obviously you moved straight into St Mary's. It was
2001.
Yeah. So
Tizier never scored there.
Oh wow! I didn't even. I thought he retired after.
He barely played the last season at the Dell, and was almost bought on against Arsenal as a sentiment, and then won the game.
Okay. That's so ridiculous.
He had a really bad season with injury that year and wasn't fit against Arsenal really.
Yeah.
Moved from the Dell to St Mary's, and there was talk of like, oh, there's a curse because things weren't going great, and then of course. 4 years down the line, we got relegated. Obviously, nothing to do with the stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a strange one. I never went to the Dell.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is a big regret, obviously. Mm. But I've always known St Mary's, but it has, even now, it's changed a lot. I don't think it's I think it's one of those grounds that is very similar to Leicester, Swansea, those sort of places.
Identikit.
Yeah, I don't think Spurs are going to have that issue with their new stadium, because it is, you know, it's a real project, and from all the things we've seen that the club have put out of this is what it's going to be, it looks magnificent. And
it must change your fan base, though. I mean, the capacity obviously went up significantly, as will Whitehall Lane. We've already seen at Wembley that obviously a huge amount of people managed to get themselves season tickets this year. A lot more young fans being, you know, going to games as well, which some people are having a bit of trouble with because of standing and swearing and stuff that you want to kind of go to football for, I suppose. was there any like noticeable change in the fan base? Did you say perhaps lose a few of the people that thought the Dell was spiritual home?
I think that's inevitable. Whenever you move stadium, you're going to get a bit of that. But I think the change for us has more come since we went down, getting relegated almost, you know, not purified, but you know, the proper hardcore fan base stayed with the club, went down to League One, and then coming back up has sort of proven this myth of the Premier League brings a plastic in inverted commas quite fan with it, because the atmosphere that we've got now is nothing compared to the atmosphere we had in League One when we couldn't staff the whole stadium. So corners were shut and things like that. But I think you're always going to get that element of it. But there's, then again, there's always a lot of excitement around the stadium move. It's seen as a new era for a club, unless you're West Ham.
Well, it is a new era for them, to be fair. It's just a terrible one.
Just a championship. I mean,
just, just on the stadium, I went to this NFL announcement thing last Thursday at Lillywhite House, which is literally next to the new stadium. It's kind of adjacent. It's at the far end from where White Hart Lane was. And we went up to the third or fourth floor, whatever it was, for the press conference, and looking out the glass windows and just see kind of the new stadium, basically. It's right there. And just, my God, it's going to be good. It's massive. Yeah. It's just
It looks like an actual full stadium now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
built, isn't it?
It's got these glass panels on the Lillywhite House side. And it just, but it's just the size of it. It just dwarfs what White Hart Lane used to be. I remember you used to walk down the high street, you know, be on the bus up the road, and you'd kind of glimpse it through the buildings, and you'd see the stands and the floodlights or whatever. But this is just going to be something else. I mean, it really is. I haven't been back. I haven't been back since the last game while I left, so I hadn't really been in Tottenham. But yeah, very impressed, and it's looking good. And it just kind of made me think, oh, I can't wait.
That's the thing. I mean, aside from covering them, I've got no affiliation to Spurs. You know, not even got like family members that support them, so I follow how they're doing. I've got Pochettino. That's my affiliation to Spurs. But I can't wait to go and work there and see what it's like. It looks like it's going to be outstanding.
It's, the more I see of it, there was drone footage released. I think it was unofficial. Someone, probably not allowed really, but he flew round it. And you can see into it, and it's a bowl now. Whereas before it's been a, it looks like what you used to put round the Sabutio. Do you remember those like plastic things fans? It looked like that, and it still does in a way, but it's whole and it's a thing now. It's not a collection of building sites. It is a thing. It's a proper stadium by the looks of it, and the cop that they've put in as well looks enormous.
It's enormous. Are you going to try and get a ticket there?
Well, I sat in South Stand, which is where it's what it's replacing, isn't it? South Stand. I sat in South Stand for when we were at White Hart Lane, but there's not been any announcements about ticketing, and I think there's got to be some lessons learned from Wembley as well, because the thing was great about White Hart Lane is that over the years you built communities almost of where you sat, you know, where I sat.
There's that guy next to you used to moan a lot.
Well, yeah, and he.
No, I think you told me about him. Is he a listener?
No. Well, I don't think so. I mean, it doesn't narrow it down at White Hart Lane, does it? Really, but there was a few guys around you that when you first go there, you're like, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to stand a whole season of this. This is earache. But you experience all the moments with them, and you just end up liking them because they are part of your match day experience. We used to sit two seats in front of a ref, and you'd be caning the ref, like just getting up in it. You know it's not a foul, you know it's not handball, it's not a yellow card, but you're screaming for it because you're in the stands and everyone else is. And just after it all starts dying down, you'd get a guy two rows behind you go, well, actually, I don't think that was even a foul. And it was like really annoying. And you're like, ah, mate, just join in. But in the end, it became funny. And you're just part of it. And you're never going to recapture that. But you need to recognise that has been the case for some people.
I think if you get a season ticket, you will eventually recapture it.
I think it depends how they greet people, though. Because I know there was, speaking to friends of mine that are West Ham season ticket holders, they all got put in the wrong place, essentially, at London Stadium. And then had to move everything around again, and it was a real problem. But as I think there's, like you said, there's lessons to learn from Wembley. There's lessons to learn from how West Ham handled it. I think there should be enough there to get it right.
Not to mention the Emirates as well. That's the great thing about it. You've got all these examples of
how to do it.
How to fuck it up as well. Yeah.
But we're actually three months away from when normally season ticket renewals would go out. It's always April. It's always after we've lost the FA Cup semi that they always land on your bloody doorstep. So we're not far off, and I know that it was easier to do when you've got an actual stadium that you know you're going to be in next season, and I'm sure we will be ready for August, but
it's just something to think about. It's something a little bit like it's coming round a bit sooner than we think. So I'm just interested. I'll be interested to hear what the plans are and how it's all going to look at the end of it. We've run out of time for the question. I think the question probably would have brought us over time. It was about Arsenal signing, possibly signing Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan, and the other one, Malcolm. Does that put him above us? They're still coached by Arsene Wenger.
Does Tottenham still have Harry Kane, Dele Alli, and whoever else?
Who have played together like 3 years in a row, got Pochettino on the up.
No
problem.
Assuming that Sanchez and Ozil in the summer are going, then I don't think they're any stronger.
No, absolutely not. Definitely not. They are two of the world-class players in the Premier League. Might not have always shown it, but they had them both, played them both together, and were still shit. Because they have no defenders and they've got a bad manager. And that's not changed. They're not going to spend any money on replacing Rob Holding. So I see no issue with it, honestly. People panicking over nothing. Don't forget what we've done over the last few years. Right, okay. We'll finish that there. Jack, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Best of luck, I will say, for the weekend. Because
keep it under three.
It's just
please.
Polite.
You've done much better than the Liverpool fan we had on before. Mm. After the Liverpool.
Yeah, he was unpopular with a few people. I mean, we like to bring a little bit of perhaps disagreement and a bit of like bouncing off each other, bringing different ideas.
You know, the most annoying thing was that he's obviously a mate of mine, and Spurs went on a terrible run after that game, as we all know.
Yeah, of course.
And he kind of didn't really say anything. We didn't discuss the pod because I think he knew that I was outraged by his performance. And then about just in the midst of that terrible, that autumn run, when he just calls me up and just the first thing he said was like, "Yeah, mate, just wondering if you now admit that I was totally right on the book."
Oh, God.
I just went, "Fuck off."
He asked a question for the this one.
Ignore him. Don't.
Okay, I won't give him the satisfaction.
I can't gloat anything down the line, though, because I've just been pessimistic.
Yeah, so. It's always easier to preview as well, so yeah, fair play. No, thanks for coming down, Jack. We will be back next week after the Southampton game, and then we'll preview the
Southampton win.
I'm not comfortable saying that. I'm not going to go that far, I'm afraid. But yeah, and then we're going to preview obviously a very, very busy and scary February, but we look forward to that. Dan, nice to see you.
Cheers, mate. Thanks.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us. Bye bye.